is Bean to Barstool, a podcast that looks at the intersections of craft beer and craft chocolate. My name is David Nilsson. I'm a professional beer writer and an advanced Cicerone, and the creator and host of this show. The music for this episode is by my dear friend, indie folk musician Anna P.S. You can find out more about Anna's music in the show notes or at her website, annapsmusic.com. You can find links and information about our guests in the show notes as well. I hope you enjoy this episode of Bean to Barstool. In today's episode, we'll talk with Kjartan Gislason, the founder of Om Nom Chocolate in Reykjavik, Iceland. Om Nom is known not only for their delicious and creative bean to bar chocolate, but for the colorful packaging and marketing that presents the spirit of Om Nom to consumers. We'll talk about that spirit behind Om Nom, as well as their collaborations with Reykjavik craft breweries on both chocolates and beers, and the use of flavors distinct to Icelandic culture. Reykjavik, Iceland sits on a mounded spit of land reaching out into Faxa Bay in the North Atlantic, a couple thousand miles north of where the Titanic dove for the bottom a century ago. The city's low buildings and irregular streets tumble down toward the foot of the water, crouched against the wind and watched over by Mount Esja, 7 miles to the north across the bay. The world's northernmost capital is no place of easy comforts. The entire city hunkers against the cold wind like barnacles clinging to the tugboats that dot the city's harbor. My wife and I were there one November to explore its beer scene, and we'd weathered the chill and the rain and snow all week. We're Midwesterners. It's our life half of the year, and easy comforts aren't something we expect. Still, when we traveled to the city on the water, the first winter storm of the season caught us by surprise. Reykjavik's streets curl up from the water on all sides, and the wind and wet weave their way up these narrow urban tunnels like anadromous fish, and pedestrians are just rocks in the stream. On the morning of our last day, a fierce winter blow wandered in on a sea witch's whisper in the pre-dawn light and howled against the city all through the day and into the evening. It felt like the wind had picked up the sea with it and flung it against the city. It was no day for the leaky Converse tennis shoes we'd been wearing all week. It's a testament to our priorities in life that we'll fly around the world to try exotic beers, but do so in shoes that have open holes in the soles. We pack light even in winter, relying on layers rather than heavy coats, and we've gotten used to the pitying looks of locals in foreign cities as we hunch against the cold in thin hoodies. We grew up near the Great Lakes, so we know how to be happy even when we're damp and shivering as long as there's good beer nearby. We plan many of our international trips for the hinge season of mid-autumn, a tilt felt most keenly at this city's latitude. We witnessed Reykjavik during the thin stretch of the year when they experience days as the rest of us do, when the sun sets and then rises and sets again. We walked these streets as they passed from months of endless light to months of endless darkness. You could feel dusk encroach on the city from both sides of the clock, gradually claiming more and more. Reykjavik's cafes and bars were islands of light and warmth in a city awash in its own atmospheric fury, cozy in a way that seems to intentionally compensate for the bleak pragmatism of the city's exteriors. A warm, steamy window appears in the dark of a dripping side street. You open a door, and the idea of warmth enters you before the temperature itself does. The ceiling is low, as is the lighting and the volume. The bars are different each, but united in their ensconced insistence on hedonistic comfort. Outside the windows of Kaldi Bar, which poured beers from local breweries, including Borg, the witch of the North Atlantic howled down the streets, cracking tree limbs that would litter the streets the next morning. At the end of the night, we stepped back out into that maelstrom. It was difficult to remember what dry feet even felt like, but we were past caring. We held each other close and found our way home through the city's twisting streets, the wind still raging, though the rain had slowed. Porch lights glowed in the darkness, and the city's architecture, so austere and pragmatic in the light, took on the severe beauty of the coastline, staccato silhouettes glistening in the damp. We were euphoric from some alchemy of sleep deprivation, alcohol, and the singular elation of being in a foreign place. This peninsula of water and concrete and black beaches of volcanic sand reaching into the distance like photographic negatives of a Caribbean paradise was its own intoxication. The next morning, the storm was nearly forgotten in the dawn light. The sea was calm, and the rain and wind had moved on. Some downed tree branches were all that remained of the previous day's ferocity. Everything was quiet again in the harbor at the foot of a mountain in this city by the sea. When we traveled to Reykjavik, it was at the very beginning of my awareness of Bean to Bar chocolate. I knew about Om Nom, but due to a rare lack of preparation, my wife and I are consummate list makers and double checkers, we arrived at Om Nom's factory near the tip of a small peninsula beside the harbor, 10 minutes too late on our final day in Iceland. They had closed. We bought bars from gift shops instead, and hopefully we'll return someday and get to tour the factory made famous, at least to some degree, by Zac Efron's Netflix show Down to Earth, which highlighted Om Nom in an episode in 2020. Reykjavik is a quirky but delightful city, with eye-melting street murals and great live music, hot dog stands and amazing seafood, year-round outdoor swimming pools, even a phallic museum? Yes, that is what it sounds like. Om Nom perfectly embodies the singular spirit of its home, and I sat down recently with Om Nom's Kjartan Gislason to talk about how the company got started and the spirit behind its creativity.
So I'm a chef by trade and kind of been always been very interested in all things cooking, especially kind of like what really always gets me excited is a type of method of how you cook things, you know, the kind of procedures and stuff like that. So I've always been kind of nerdy in that aspect. So I always liked dessert, even though I'm not a pastry chef. I always thought that chocolate was something different. And the first time I actually went into a chocolate factory, that was in France, the Valrhona factory, more than 20 years ago. And it just kind of blew me away because I kind of never thought much about how chocolate was made. As a chef, you always just get it ready into the kitchen to work with. Or when you're a kid, you just buy it from the grocery store. And you maybe don't think too much about how it's made. So it was kind of eye-opening experience seeing how it was made, coming from the beans, how they get processed into this beautiful liquid. And then really the story of how the beans become actually beans, you know, coming from a cocoa pod, which is the fruit. And inside of it, you have the beans, which is basically the seeds of the fruit. And then the process of fermenting them and drying before the chocolate maker can actually start using them to make chocolate. So the idea came to me almost 10 years ago now that I approached one of my childhood friend, Oskar, hit him this idea that I wanted to do something on my own. I was kind of getting tired of working in restaurants and wanted maybe something like a day job or my own kind of business. And I had this idea opening up a bakery shop, kind of pastry shop that we would do breads and, you know, pastry and have our own chocolate made in-house that we'd use for the pastry. And I was kind of explaining to him, you know, the process of making chocolate. And he was, you know, he had never really heard about that either. He's not a chef. So to him, that I was kind of, I could have been explaining him, I don't know, the quantum physics theory. He kind of came back to me later on and said, you know, I like the thing you were talking about chocolate. Because he gets very interested in food. And he thought it was kind of interesting that I wanted to make my own chocolate. His background is maybe more in business and different types of ventures that he had been in the past, but he kind of always talked that we wanted to do something food-wise together. So he was impressed with his idea, but he kind of thought it would be very interesting to maybe create a brand around it, like maybe just go on full-on chocolate making, but not that kind of pastry shop idea that I have. And as long as I get to make chocolate, I'm happy. So we started kind of experimenting with it, but as I said, we've had these kind of ideas in the past of doing something together. So I never really thought we would get this kind of like off the ground. I always thought we were just going to, you know, work on this for a couple of months and then get bored with it and go back to our job. So, but luckily it kind of worked that after we started kind of researching, buying equipment, getting the material, my apartment, and just kind of playing around with some ideas that just struck with us that, you know, we might have something here. I mean, like the first time I made my first batch of chocolate and we tasted it and we knew like, wow, this tastes so different from anything else because we're using cocoa beans that are much more rare, much more premium in taste. And also have been taking a lot of care of from the growers who are, and also the ones who do the fermentation. So the kind of bean to bar culture or kind of business had just around that time had been slowly growing. And I think we came in at a time when it was just about to explode. So we were there kind of like early on with the rest of the kind of bean to bar chocolate movement that has been going on for the past 10, 15 years now. And eventually, when we felt confident enough that we had something, we decided to contact a friend of mine who was a graphic designer and just pitch him this idea and see if he could come up with a concept, kind of design and look and feel for the brand that we wanted to make. So we always just felt like this was going to stop at some point. You know, we were always kind of like half interested in the idea, even though I was very enthusiastic about just figuring out how to make the best chocolate, how to do the best roasting, and et cetera. So, but once we kind of got the first design sent back from our designer, it kind of took a life on its own. We just saw that, okay, this could actually turn out to be something. So we invested a little bit more money. We found actually a location here in Reykjavik, which was an old gasoline station that was been abandoned for a couple of years. So we set up shop there. And 8 years on, we are at a much bigger facility now. We moved to a new production space 5 years ago. It's not far away from that gasoline station that we were originally in. We have around 30 employees at this point, and we're exporting a lot more than we did before. So it's kind of been growing more towards that direction of export, even though it's something, you know, when you're younger, I would say, you had these kind of ideas. Yeah, maybe this could be a product that we could export. So we always thought in the beginning to keep everything in English just in case, you know, if somebody would be interested in buying this abroad. So it's grown almost to 50% of our production gets exported.
And where do you source your cacao?
So the beans that we're currently using come from Madagascar, Tanzania, and Nicaragua. In the past, we've had cocoa beans coming from Peru, some from the Dominican Republic, and also Belize. And we're constantly always getting new cocoa beans in-house to test out and think about. But those three that I mentioned have become our kind of like stable ones that we use for especially our single origin dark chocolates. And also using some of our milk chocolate. And I always like to just use the single origin for whatever product we make. I've done tests of blending the beans together and it comes out with interesting flavor profile, but I just like using the single origin ones.
Sure.
Because they have such a specific flavor.
And are you working directly with farms or are you using a broker to acquire those?
For instance, with Madagascar, that's the kind of only direct farm cocoa beans we get. It comes from a farm in Madagascar in the San Bernardino Valley called Akison. I mean, we're like on first name basis with Bertil Akison, the owner of the plantation. He also sells a lot of his beans to a lot of other bean to bar producers and places like Valrona, that factory I mentioned earlier. Tanzania and Nicaragua, those are more like accumulation of different farms, but under one umbrella. For instance, in Tanzania, we have a company called Coco Camilli that buys off the beans in the region that they work with. So up to like 300 different farms that they buy their cocoa beans from. And also they do the fermentation. And then sometimes we have to go through a broker to get those beans, but we're always in close contact with all those middlemen, at least.
You mentioned your graphic design, and you certainly do have very recognizable and eye-catching wrappers and artwork. Tell me a little bit about how that helps to tell the story of your chocolate.
Initially, when I pitched the idea to Andre, who was our initial graphic designer, that I wanted to something colorful, maybe hints of, you know, something childish, but not too. We didn't want to go Teletubbies or anything like that, but something. I mean, both me and Andre had a lot of passion for comic books and maybe anime, like manga, the Japanese kind of stuff. So he's done different kind of works in the past. And I remember seeing something from his portfolio that looked very similar to our logo. And I kind of pointed at that and said, this is the kind of style I would love to do. This is the kind of retro, timeless kind of feel to it. And we definitely wanted something that would just be kind of eye-catching, colorful, but also a fun element about it, because I think, you know, both the name itself kind of came from like an internet meme at the time. We just wanted something that was a little silly, but, you know, chocolate should be fun. It should be a fun experience to eat it. It's something that we grow up eating as a candy, and this, what we produce, is kind of has all those elements, but, you know, also done for adults, but, you know, for the kid inside of us. Enjoyment kind of feel to it. So we were just trying to capture that kind of vibe when we were talking about the design for the packaging.
We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, 5th Street Brew Pub in Dayton, Ohio is one of our sponsors at Bean to Barstool and Final Gravity, our print beer zine, and they just happen to be one of my favorite hometown breweries. They're one of the only cooperatively owned breweries in the country, a testament to their community focus and support. Inside a building from the 1850s in the historic neighborhood of St. Anne's Hill, 5th Street Brew Pub offers a warm, cozy atmosphere and excellent beer and food. And you can take your favorite beers to go with their Gem City Swing Tops, elegant swing top bottles filled straight from the taps with regular favorites like St. Anne's Pills and Rough Gem Farmhouse Ale, or current seasonals like Noel Belgian Dark Ale with vanilla and cinnamon, or Velvet Anxiety, a bourbon barrel imperial stout brewed with cacao nibs from Mezzo Cacao. If you're in the Dayton area, head over to 5th Street to hang out or grab beer to go. And if you're visiting Dayton, and you should, make sure 5th Street is on your list. Cheers. You've done some bars. I'm thinking about the Lacris and Sea Salt Bar in particular that use some very iconically Icelandic flavors in them. Can you talk a little bit about that bar and getting to kind of use that Icelandic culinary tradition?
The Lacris or licorice is something that's been, I don't know, since I was a kid, always this kind of, especially black salty licorice. And maybe it was like in the 80s, I think it was, that people would buy like a roll of black licorice and a milk chocolate bar, and they would kind of like combine the two. Hmm. They would always buy them separately. And it became like a trend. People would buy these kind of licorice roll, and they would kind of roll it around the milk chocolate bar and then eat it like that. And that became like a thing that all the kids knew, like, you need to try this. This is the best. And I think the kind of candy companies at the time kind of heard about this. And one producer, one of the biggest here in Iceland, started producing the combo of black licorice and milk chocolate together. And then basically every other company, candy company, started producing the same kind of variant of it. And it just became like synonymous. You have black licorice and milk chocolate somehow blended together. And it just became this thing that would always work. So when we started talking about some flavor ideas, of course, licorice was like the first thing that came to mind. And I wanted to try something different with it, not making the kind of, you know, because black licorice candy is basically sugar syrup and a lot of flour boiled together till it becomes this soft, chewy kind of type candy. But taking the licorice root itself, the source ingredient for licorice, so mm-hmm. getting that and mixing that into like a white chocolate blend, kind of resulted in a very similar way as the kind of combo that everybody had been doing, but much more vivid, much more flavorful. So that we knew for at least the Icelandic market would work. We weren't sure that would be something that others outside of Iceland would like. Also, we added like a healthy dose of salt to it just to kind of like balance the sweetness. But that bar actually kind of made us as a business. I mean, it started outselling everything else that we were producing here in Iceland. And this was before we started exporting as much as we're doing now, and became a, like a staple product for us, something that we could actually earn some money on and, you know, buy more equipment and hire more staff. So for us, it's a very, and still is, one of our most best sellers.
I think what's amazing for me when I taste that bar is that it tastes like licorice root more than it tastes like licorice candy. My dad started giving me licorice root to chew on when I was a kid, and I've, you know, done that ever since. And it has such a more robust flavor than just licorice candy like we buy at the store. So when I taste that bar, it's that full licorice root flavor in there.
Exactly. And that's really what we're using. So we use the powder that comes from the licorice root. So the root itself gets steamed. So it's soft and palatable, and then it gets kind of crushed, and it releases this kind of sap kind of juice that comes from it, and that gets dehydrated, and that's the powder that we use for the bar. And it's very pungent and very kind of, you can almost inhale it, and you can feel it in your lungs because it's very strong. So you have to be a little bit careful when we're mixing that into the blends.
My understanding is that licorice root does not grow in northern climates. How did that become part of Icelandic culinary tradition?
That's a very good question. I think a lot of our kind of food heritage culture comes from the Scandinavians, like licorice candies is very popular in Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and even all the way to the Netherlands. They have all this kind of food taste for the salty black licorice, and somehow it just made its way to Iceland as well. So I have no idea where the kind of start came from. But of course, it's a very Middle Eastern ingredient that has somehow made its way here. For instance, when we've had people from Japan come to our shop and we let them taste the licorice bar, they get so turned off by it, because for them, licorice is only something that's used in medicine. So having that as a combination in candy blows their mind. Some of them like it, but others just feel like this is not right.
What has the response been of the Reykjavik community to having an internationally known chocolate company right there in the city?
That's actually a good question. I'm not sure really, but we're one of a kind here in Iceland and Reykjavik, of course. So I think still what we're kind of like always trying to get the point across, that we actually make our chocolate from scratch from the cocoa bean. And it's like I said earlier when I was explaining it to my business partner Oscar in the beginning, it still feels like you're explaining something so complex to people that they don't really get their head around it. But I think like with the media and other talk, we have won some awards in terms of kind of environmental made food products. So I think the reception here has been really good. This kind of similar way how craft beer started making headlines and people just discovered that beer can be so many different things and different ingredients and different types of style, etc. So I feel like we're kind of used that sometimes as an example of what we were doing. Like how microbreweries are making their beer, how why an IPA doesn't taste like the regular lager or pilsner. So it's just like we are using a different method and trying to source our own ingredients to impact the flavor. But overall, if we just terms of Iceland, I think we've been very well received. We are in most local supermarkets here in Iceland and Reykjavik. It has gained more traction. And I think especially now in COVID, even when most people that wouldn't go out to any supermarket or shop, our online sales spiked really in that period. So it really kind of helped.
Kjartan mentioned the reception to Om Nom's chocolate in Reykjavik has been similar to that of craft beer, and he has collaborated with several breweries in the city on chocolate beers, as well as a chocolate bar that uses a beer ingredient rarely found in craft chocolate. I understand with the black and burnt barley bar that came about sort of as an accident. Tell me a little bit of the backstory behind that bar.
So we have done tastings, might sample out, getting groups in, explaining how chocolate is made. And sometimes we wanted to do something different. And some breweries, local breweries here, had asked us if we want to do a collaboration, like tasting chocolate and beer together, which is actually really fun. I prefer that even more to any kind of wine and chocolate tasting. I think beer is amazing because you have so many varieties, right? Yeah. So it's kind of like, and so it works really well together. You have different types of bitters and sweetness and even sourness from beer that kind of really works with chocolate. So it was like at one of those nights that one of our local brewers here, Borg, came. They would bring a lot of their ingredients to just show off some of the barley, the different type of roasted barley, the hops and everything. And people are smelling and also smelling cacao beans and then tasting everything together. And when they left that night, they kind of just left all their stuff in our what we call the classroom. And we have been working on a recipe for like a white chocolate that had like some kind of caramel note to it. We wanted to have that kind of caramel flavor in the bar. And we've done a bar in the past that worked out okay, but was very unstable because we're using caramelized sugar in it. And when you temper a bar with caramelized sugar, it starts to attract a lot of moisture. So it would just crystallize on the inside. And I kind of almost gave up on trying to figure out that right type of caramelization flavor. So when I was looking at those leftovers they left with us, specifically the kind of heavy roasted barley that they had left, I had something going on in one of my test machines. I just poured some in, hoping that I would get some kind of bitter, burnt kind of flavor that would resemble like caramelized sugar. And then the day after when we came and tasted it, it looked very brown, grayish, and didn't look very appeasing, but when we tasted it, it was like, whoa, this is kind of interesting. This doesn't have, It does have caramel notes, but it has a lot more kind of grainy, malty flavor to it. Something you just call, this is like burnt toast, but delicious burnt toast. Like, so it just kind of stuck with us for a while. We talked about it. And then when I started working on it, I was just playing with different types of roasted malt. But I always came to that first one that I accidentally just threw in there. The heavy was called Carafa 3. You know, the ones that you kind of have for the stouts. And I wanted to use that. And I definitely knew that I wanted also some kind of the texture, the kind of crispiness, because I was eating some of it, like almost feels like those popcorn kernels that are at the bottom of your popcorn can, that, you know, the ones that are a little crispy but have that kind of toasty flavor. So I found a farm here in Iceland that does organic barley. We got that. We took it to a popcorn factory, just made sense, and had them kind of puff it up for us. And we also used that puff barley and we grounded that into like a powder and added that into it. We added some malt flour as well and that toasted barley as well. So it was that kind of eureka moment that came. It was like, okay, this is getting more malty, more grainy. We had a lot of groups come through the factory and we let them sample something we're working on. Everybody would stop with that one. It was like, what is that? So the kind of final ingredient we added was the activated charcoal made from coconut acid. And it gave that kind of hint of smoke and that kind of dramatic color as well. So, and of course, a healthy dose of salt. And we felt we had something. And we just put it out there. You know, we didn't know what kind of reaction we'd get. But the black and burnt barley bar is technically a white chocolate bar that became black. So
yeah, it's really interesting that it's a white chocolate and it's the darkest bar I've ever seen.
Yeah. And that mostly, of course, contributes from the activated charcoal. Like you just hinted. Without it, it's very kind of milk chocolate, kind of grayish color. But that kind of, and I think that's why we kind of started experimenting adding the charcoal. But what we didn't expect that it comes with a hint of kind of like smoke. So that just kind of felt it all worked out. And it felt very Icelandic as well, kind of. We did a small adjustment to the recipe last summer, where usually when you make white chocolate, you have the cocoa butter, you have sugar, and you have milk powder. That's like your basic white chocolate recipe. Mm-hmm. So we thought there was a flavor there with the milk version that was kind of savory, maybe overly savory, and we started experimenting taking out the milk powder and adding more of that puff barley flour that we had added, and it just became more kind of malty and grainy. And texturally, it was a little more grainy, but because we're kind of reducing the fat from it, so it's not as creamy and soft. But flavor wise, I thought it dominated better than the milk version, so now it's like almost fully vegan in that sense.
So you're using Carafa 3, you're getting Icelandic barley that you're having puffed at a popcorn place, and then you're using the malt powder. Where are you sourcing all those from? You mentioned the farm for the barley. Are you still working with the brewery to get the Carafa 3, or do you go straight through a provider?
We went straight to the provider. So both the Carafa 3 and the malt flour come from Germany, and the other, of course, barley from Iceland. The thing about the Icelandic barley, which I've heard from other brewers that I've been trying to make beer from, it doesn't have that, forgive me, my knowledge of beer is kind of average, but if I'm understanding it correctly, it doesn't have that kind of right type of sprout, so you can't get that nice maltiness, that kind of, it doesn't have high sugar level, if I'm saying this correctly. So that's the reason we can use that as the kind of main flavor component, and that's why we need to source it outside of Iceland.
Sure. And I understand that some breweries there in Iceland have also used your cacao then in some beers. Can you share with me some of those examples?
Yeah, I think the first one was an Easter beer that brewery Borg made. I think it was back in 2014. And they used the coconut from Madagascar in it. And they also used it for a Christmas beer later on that year. I think they also put some gingerbread into the mix. So it's kind of like a chocolate gingerbread bread beer. But the most maybe fun part that they use, some of the brewers, is that, so when you roast a cacao bean, you need to winnow it to remove the kind of outer shell husk to expose the nibs, because the nibs is basically the main ingredient for chocolate. But that husk that I It was something that we used, we'd throw away because it didn't have any more purpose. But sometimes we tried making like a cold brew out of it, and it did taste kind of funky, kind of like a, I don't know, a kind of weird malty chocolate tasting tea. And so I think I talked to some brewers and said, do you guys want to try using this? This could be fun. This has a lot of flavor in there. And I gave them the cold brew, and they're like, ooh, this is like body into it. And so they started taking some of that husk and adding to their beer as well. And I think that even worked better than the coconuts, because since the coconuts have basically have 50% fat, and they were having problems. Sometimes the fat would be seeping into the liquid and it wouldn't work as well. But with the cocoa husk, on the other hand, they would get a lot of different type of flavor. It's not like chocolate flavor, but cocoa-ish. So, and it's perfect that they're using it because it's just being repurposed. Otherwise, we'd just throw it out.
And I've seen you've done one with Kex. Is that right?
Yeah, I might have missed out how many we've done with. We've done, Kex Brewery might have used it at one point. At least four or five other breweries that have been using stuff from us, so.
We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. Final Gravity Issue 4 is now available in the Bean to Barstool shop. This fourth issue of our zine telling intimate, human-centered stories from the world of beer is full of great articles, including Kate Power of Lady Justice Brewing talking about why she might be done with beer festivals, Ukrainian beer writer Lana Svitnikova writing about the Zeugel brewing tradition in Germany, UK writer Matthew Curtis talking about the blend of old and new in the cask ale tradition in Manchester, and many more. We believe passionately in this project, and if you believe the story of beer is ultimately a story about people and relationships, we think you'll love Final Gravity as well. You can order the new issue from our shop on beantobarstool.com, or you can also subscribe, including subscribing for your brewery tap room or break room, or you can subscribe and sign up to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/beantobarstoolzines. Now, back to the episode. You mentioned pairing earlier, and I agree with you. I love pairing beer and chocolate. Do you have any quick thoughts on your experiences from doing that, recommendations for people on pairing beer and chocolate?
Yeah, it's my preference was kind of like always that, for instance, if you do something, a dark beer, like a porter or a stout, you feel like you're going to go for a dark chocolate, but it's kind of like the opposite always. So if you're drinking something darker, full body and more bitter, you would go for something sweeter, like a sweeter milk chocolate or white chocolate. And those two things will always combine. And then even when you go to like a sour ale, then it's perfect to go to a dark chocolate because those two things will kind of work out. It was kind of like just a simple rule of thumb is basically go for the kind of opposite of what you think it's going to be. And it's going to be much more delicious. But overall, I think milk chocolate for me works best with any type of beer. If it's kind of sweet and milky chocolate, it will more or less kind of work best across the board. Dark beers, definitely for milk chocolate, and lighter beers, you could then start going to the dark world where it's no milk in it, because you're going to get some sweetness from the beer and then you're going to get some more bitterness from the chocolate. So it kind of works the other way.
So for you tasting chocolate, you're working with this every day. You know, you're kind of seeing behind the scenes every single day what's going into this. Do you still get to sit down and just enjoy chocolate and taste that in an intentional way for yourself?
Yes. And I think I kind of need to be outside work to do that, because when you're in here, you know, we're roasting cocoa beans, we're working with it constantly. It's in the air, so you're smelling it. So you can taste something that you're working on, but you kind of need to get out of it, go home, you know, make dinner and maybe sit down, watch something on Netflix, then open up a bar and just be in the moment for that, at least just to sample it, to fully appreciate it. And sometimes I'm surprised about some of the kind of products that we've been making for the past 8 years. And I haven't even tasted it except for sometimes a small quality test. When I come home, something that maybe the first lineup of chocolate we did, and I tasted again, and I kind of like, this is like a nice reminder of like, okay, this is still good. This is still surprising. This is still has that kind of warm feeling about it. So when you're out of work, you definitely kind of appreciate it more.
Do you love chocolate today as much as you did when you started making it?
I would say yes, but I also would say like, I think I have a different appreciation for it. And especially like tasting other people's or other manufacturers' product as well. That, like, for instance, there's a lot of, like I mentioned, to make chocolate from those Madagascan beans and do it in a very similar way. But there's something about some of these producers that are doing something different. And you were like thinking to say, what did they do there? Because we're using the same source material, but it definitely tastes different. It tastes sweeter or it tastes more fruitier or something like that. So I think I have a lot of fun and I'm being surprised about other chocolate makers' chocolate.
Do you have a favorite of your own bars?
One that I always appreciate most is called Dark Milk of Tanzania. And it's the kind of chocolate that I enjoy the most. I love milk chocolate, I would say more than dark chocolate, but it has a different type of vibe about it. But the Dark Milk Tanzania was a chocolate that actually my sister gave me the inspiration for it, because he wanted to do a dark milk chocolate, but that was very dark, so it's 65%. And so it has a very minimum amount of sugar in it, only like 25%, and just a little bit of milk powder, but still it has that kind of robust flavor from the Tanzania bean, but the kind of texture of milk chocolate. So I kind of get the best of both worlds with that bar.
What story is your chocolate telling at Om Nom?
I think I'm still, like I mentioned earlier, on this path of trying to maybe educate people about how chocolate can vary, whether it be from a single origin or into milk or into white. Like the white chocolate category that we have, that's really where I can let loose, because I'm not working the restraint of the cocoa flavor, but more with the cocoa texture, the chocolate texture. So I think the Black and Burn, the licorice bar are kind of like good example of just seeing what chocolate can be. And then also when you come to the single origin ones, I feel like we're telling a story of a place, where it comes from, why it tastes like this, the people behind it. So, if you look at all our bars, if you would put them side to side, you would see all this different color spectrum. And maybe that's how we see life and people, that we're all different in shapes and color and where we come from, but we're all at the end the same. So maybe that's something.
Black and Burnt Barley is one of my favorite bars from Om Nom. The barley is soft like puffed rice, and the texture reminds me of Honey Smacks cereal. The flavor is like almost burnt caramel corn, with Om Nom's classic caramel tones and silky texture, with just enough bite to balance the sweetness and some sea salt to fill out the flavor. As you heard me tell Kjartan, the licorice and sea salt bar is richly evocative for me, as the flavor of licorice root has been familiar to me since childhood. The bar has a deep and true presentation of the round flavor of licorice root rather than the denuded version often found in black licorice candy, with notes of absinthe and caramel and a touch of bitterness. And let's talk for a moment about how Om Nom's gorgeous packaging dovetails with the flavors of each bar, allowing us to engage every sense in the tasting process. The artwork of the three bars in this year's collection together tell the story of Iceland, with a whale swimming through the aurora borealis above Arctic wildlife standing in the snow, with waterfalls, black sand, a meandering stream, darkness, and light. The artwork for one of these bars, Dark Nibs and Raspberry, was especially beautiful to me, with its celestial cetacean manifested in life, solar radiation effulgent upon the projection screen of the northern sky, the haunted call of the deep echoing through a lunar microphone into the vastness of space, even the bashful stars turning their faces to the song. Yes, I'm letting my description get away from me, but if we can't be whimsical about chocolate, what can we be whimsical about? I could use more whimsy in my life as we settle into 2022. You can find all of the bars mentioned here, as well as many others, on omnomchocolate.com, which I'll link to in the show notes, though the winter bars will disappear quickly, and the Black and Burnt Barley is temporarily out of stock. It'll be back soon. Grab some of these bars and enjoy the delicious Icelandic brand of whimsy that is Om Nom Chocolate.
Thanks to Kjartan for coming on the show today. In the next episode of Bean to Barstool, we'll talk with Rebecca Hess of Cleveland Chocolate Company about her journey from chef to chocolate maker, and hear from Sean Yasaki of Noble Beast Brewing, who has used Rebecca's cacao in some excellent beers. That will come out on Tuesday, February 1st. Thanks for listening to Bean to Barstool.